Partnerships are great. I wouldn't have been able to get where I am without it. I think they're a great way to scale. Obviously, you have to do your due diligence. You can't just go out and partner with anyone. You really have to vet that person as much as you can on the front end, because realistically, you're getting into at least a 10-year relationship, could be a lifelong relationship with this business partner. And it's almost like you're the person you marry. I mean, it's almost as big as that of a decision. So
welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Brock Mogensen began investing in real estate just a little over 3 years ago. He lives and invests in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he holds a master's in information systems and comes from an analytical background. He specializes in underwriting and incorporating data models for asset management. As a principal at Smart Asset Capital, the firm currently has $15 million in assets under management. They own everything from multifamily, office, retail, industrial, and self-storage. And he's also co-host of the largest monthly multifamily meetup in Wisconsin, which is the Wisconsin Apartment Investors Meetup. Brock, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask everybody who comes to the show. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start, where are you now, and how did you get there?
So it started about 3 years ago with a duplex. So I started with the house hack model, like a lot of people start, and quickly realized how awesome real estate is. You start realizing all the benefits, cash flow, taxes, all of it. So I fell in love with it, decided, all right, I want to make this my full-time thing. How am I going to scale this much quicker? As I kind of looked through at different avenues, right, there's a million different ways you can go in real estate. So I spent some time researching different ways. And syndication was kind of the route I ended up taking. Spent some time learning, partnered with the right people, and was able to scale pretty quickly because of it.
Wow. Walk us through that process. Was duplex, was it the last single family residence you bought?
Yeah, that was the last deal I've bought just straight up on my own. Everything since then has been the partnership syndication model.
Talk to us through that process, because that's a tough jump to make, I think, for a lot of people, especially starting out. You say, hey, well, I got one duplex under my belt. Now I want to go start doing syndications. Or joint venturing. Most people are going to say, hey, you need more experience or you need more X, Y, or Z. How'd you overcome that?
Exactly. So my thought process was, so I quickly realized that, right? As I'm looking at it, it's like, I don't have the net worth. I don't have the experience. I don't have all this stuff that's required to go buy a big apartment complex. There's a whole bunch of different pieces that go into syndicating a deal. Let me kind of just learn one piece of it. And then I'll take that strong suit and go out and find partners that are looking for someone in that strong suit that are stronger in these other pieces. So I chose the underwriting piece of it. I naturally kind of came from an analytical background for my W-2 job. So that was where I spent 6 months to a year just learning everything I could, practicing, analyzing deals, all of it. And then went out and networked, ended up finding people that fit that exact criteria. They were stronger on the capital raising side and had all the experience to go do these deals. And it just kind of right time, right place sort of thing.
That's interesting. And you still kind of hold that position today?
Yeah, I'd say underwriting is still my main focus. But as we've done more and more deals, you learn the different pieces. And at this point, I'm involved in almost every single piece of it, helping on the capital raising and all of that. So it's been good to be able to kind of learn everything else.
Right. Talk to us about the types of deals that you guys buy. I mean, you're kind of all over, or at least have your hands dipped in, it seems, every asset class almost. So are you guys keeping the net wide still, or have you decided to really hyper-focus?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny how it happened. So we started with apartments, right? And that was our main focus. I'd say it still is, but we buy the first big apartment complex. And then after that, we get this office deal that kind of just falls into our lap. And so we decide, well, the fundamentals are the same. Let's buy it. Next, we get a strip mall that falls into our lap. Same thought process. We buy that. Then an industrial building comes up. So it's kind of just these deals were coming up. They were good deals. We're looking at the numbers and like, well, it's kind of just, let's learn it. We understand the fundamentals of it. There's a few nuances, but we can learn it as we go sort of thing. And that's just kind of how it happened. And we've since then have gone into several asset classes and learned the nuances of triple net leases. That's obviously the main differentiator. And it's been good. I mean, I think now, I mean, on the other side, I do see a lot of people say, stay in your lane sort of thing, focus on one thing. I get that. But for us, having a kind of wider net, I'll say, it's allowed us to see more deals and transact more. So now, I mean, we're looking at, I'd say office is the only thing right now that I wouldn't want to touch. Everything else, retail, if it's the right retail, obviously there's some risk there still, but industrial, self-storage is amazing. And obviously apartments are always great.
What do you guys see on the industrial side?
seeing pretty favorable cap rates here compared to, you know, I'd say on average 100 to 200 basis points higher on a cap rate compared to a multifamily and industrial deal. So there's a pretty good spread there. Obviously, the risk lies in an industrial deal sitting vacant. If you're looking at a single tenant industrial deal sits vacant for a year, that's quickly going to ruin the numbers. But just finding the right sort of deals with long-term strong tenants on triple net leases where you can mitigate that risk and account for some vacancy and still hit your numbers. That's kind of our strategy. And we're seeing more and more, especially in this Midwest area, there's quite a few demand for industrial. So it's been a good ride getting into it.
Yeah. And it sounds like you guys want to scale that side of your business more.
We're looking at more and more of those deals. We're working on one right now. So it's quickly going to end up being the largest percentage of our portfolio, I think, here within the next few months.
Wow. That's exciting. What type of industrial is it that you guys have found is a good niche for you?
That's a good question. So as we're getting more and more into it, that's something else we're kind of determining. Is there a certain kind of niche? Obviously, there's different sort of tenants you can target. The ones we've done so far have ranged from just kind of workshop industrial, where we have like a towing and a landscaping sort of tenant. And now it's like more of a manufacturing facility. So obviously, there's some differences there. But I think overall, we're looking for deals that are strong, that are safe, and that are going to provide good returns.
Absolutely. What's it been like growing your team and your partnership? I know kind of early out of the gate, you said, hey, this is my skill set, your right place, right time. You were able to collaborate with some other people that had other complementary skills. Walk us through that process and what advice would you give to somebody maybe who's looking to follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, I think partnerships are great. I wouldn't have been able to get where I am without it. I think they're a great way to scale. Obviously, you have to do your due diligence. You can't just go out and partner with anyone. You really have to vet that person as much as you can on the front end, because realistically, you're getting into at least a 10-year relationship, could be a lifelong relationship with this business partner. And it's almost like you're the person you marry. I mean, it's almost as big as that of a decision. So I think the biggest thing that I was looking at is, do your goals align? What's your long-term goal? Are they just looking to be in this for a few years and then retire and go down to Florida? Or do they want to do this for the rest of their lives and they're looking to build a massive company? That's the kind of things that can really ruin a partnership if one person's trying to do this and the other person's trying to do that. So you want to vet that on the front end and make sure your goals align. Obviously, you want to make sure you like the person and all that basic stuff. But I think really for me, it was making sure we all had the same vision that we want to blow this into something big. And it worked out.
How many members are on your team right now?
Three of us.
Three of you. Okay. And then how have you delineated responsibilities? I know you do underwriting, but how have you guys really separated it such that you guys aren't stepping on each other's toes or getting in each other's business as you carry on day-to-day operations?
That's a good question. I think it's something where, as we kind of identify the different segments of the business, I think I spend a lot of time finding deals and analyzing deals. That's where most of my time goes, where my partners are more on the building investor relations and building capital. So those are the three kind of things you have to do to buy a deal. And then on the asset management, so we have a partner has his own property management company. So that's a huge value he brought, as well as his experience. And so I spend time on the asset management as well. So like I said, I'm kind of wearing several different hats. And obviously the goal is to, as you continue to expand, start hiring people and kind of delegating, maybe hire a full-time asset manager. We haven't quite gotten to that point yet, but that is ultimately the goal.
Right. Yeah, for sure. That's interesting just to hear what you're thinking is moving forward on that side of things. Talk to us about the retail investments you guys have done. I mean, it's always an intriguing topic, because there's people look down on it, but it's not like you guys were doing small strip center retail investments. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. The first one we did was a strip mall that's been doing well actually through COVID. I think mostly just because of the tenant base there. That's a big part of retail, I think, especially now, is looking at the tenants. That's one of the big differences between like a retail and an apartment. Is apartments pretty straightforward on your tenants, as long as they did their credit checks in the front end and all that. But on a retail asset, I mean, you really have to dive into these tenants, looking at their tenant financials, looking at all these different things. What kind of business are they? I mean, I personally think the service-based tenants, I mean, they're here to stay. If it's a shoe store, I might be a little scared of that, because that stuff's going all online. So really just kind of taking a macro and micro view at each tenant and determining what's the risk. Obviously, there's more risk in retail than there's going to be in apartments, but generally you're able to price buy at a better price on retail. It's all about just like weighing risk, I think, when it comes to underwriting these assets.
That's an interesting point. You differentiate between multifamily and retail. Multifamily, we don't care why someone's staying there. But on the retail side, I care very much as to why you are looking to lease space or occupy a certain segment of a building. Like, your why has to make sense for you to be there. So that's very interesting. Have you had to tell any tenants no, or did you guys buy all of your buildings at this point fully occupied? What's that process been like?
There's been a few tenants that like the space just isn't right. The way they want to outfit the space doesn't make sense for us. We've had to say no in those scenarios. But we haven't had, luckily, knock on wood, much vacancy or anything, or having to deal with much vacancy in our retail stuff so far. There's one vacancy on the strip mall we bought that it's kind of a weird space we haven't filled yet. But the other one we bought was 100% occupied on the retail. So obviously that is the tough part to model. That's one thing you look at, again, comparing apartments is apartments, you can throw in a 5-7% vacancy right across the board usually, and you're pretty safe. With retail, industrial, that sort of stuff, if it's a 5-year lease in year 6, are they going to renew or are they going to move out? And if they move out, how long does it take you to fill that space? Apartments, you could fill that in a couple of weeks. Retail could take a year. That's really where it gets tough. I just usually lean toward being very conservative and usually assuming like a year to fill the space. So different stuff you have to kind of look. Again, the fundamentals are the same. NOI, all that stuff's the same. It's just a matter of vacancies and individual leases.
Right. That's interesting. Talk to us going back to your business a little bit. This is a question I haven't asked you yet, but what's a challenge that you guys are facing in your business right now? And how do you foresee you guys overcoming it?
It's a good one. I think finding like bigger deals is just very competitive. It seems like we've kind of, I think, fallen into this niche where we're doing deals in 2 to 5 million range and we're finding good deals there. But as soon as we start looking at, and we looked at quite a few, and we get into 10 plus million, it's just much more competitive, it seems, especially in the multifamily space. So far, obviously, it'd be much quicker and easier to scale if we could just do larger and larger deals. But I think when you start getting at that point, you start drawing more interest from bigger money sources and creates more competition. So I don't know if it's a niche, but it's kind of been so far we've stayed in that deal size where I'd like to get to the point where we're doing the larger deals. Just a matter of, I think, building the right broker connections.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, which begets the next question. I mean, other than really economies of scale on the transaction side, what is the compelling reason you guys want to do bigger deals?
Obviously, I mean, the easy one is it's more upside for us, right? I mean, that's the obvious one, but I think it just allows for more scale quicker. I mean, if we want to expand and hire employees and do this and all the economies of scale that come with larger deals, doing larger deals is going to further that. And generally, the larger deals you get, there usually is more economies of scale where you're able to support full-time leasing person at that property. And that's good for investors too. So a few different things. I mean, ultimately being just able to scale quicker.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. They're wanting to, like you said, economies of scale when you're bringing on people, when you're bringing on team members and things like that. The bigger the deal is, the more revenue there is, and the more you can just apply and put more people in the right seats to help drive those deals versus something smaller. But yet I would wonder on that 2 to 5 million, because not as many people are looking there, are the return profiles overall better?
That's a good question. I do think the returns are pretty attractive. They might even be slightly better. What I've seen so far personally, and maybe I'm just not seeing the right large deals, but they're pretty good in that size range, looking at the returns compared to what the deals I'm seeing in the larger price range, where it's just you're dealing with a lot of times institutional money where they're fine with 3 or 4% return, where we want to hit 10%. That's kind of the differences. Again, I'm not saying there's not good big deals out there. They are out there. I think it's just a lot of getting in that circle and finding those big deals. I think it's a pretty small circle in each market.
That's for sure. One of the challenges that a lot of people have mentioned in the smaller deal size is the financing side of things. A $2 million deal, I think it's easier to finance a $20 million deal than it is to finance a $2 million deal. So how are you guys overcoming that hurdle?
Yeah, and that's a great point. So, I mean, all but one of our deals has just been local commercial bank financing with local connections we have here. So downside is, right, we're taking on recourse on those loans. We're able to get pretty attractive terms, right? You're not going to deal with a lot of the prepayment penalties you might see on some agency or CMBS stuff. That's pretty attractive. And we have good relationships where if something COVID hits and something goes wrong, we can call our guy and say, hey, can we do something about this? We might not have that much flexibility working with the big banks. But obviously the biggest thing is, when you get in the larger deal size and you start looking at agency and CMBS and these different financing options, it's non-recourse, which is huge. I mean, that's a big part of it. And generally, you can get some pretty good interest rates and good amortization schedules on those sort of deals. So I think there's benefits and negatives to either one. The non-recourse is just, I think that's kind of the differentiator when you get in these larger deals.
Right. Man, this is awesome. Brock, I've really enjoyed learning about you guys, what you're doing and how you're looking to scale. Fast forward, say 3 years. Where would you like your company to be?
3 years from now, I continue seeing us building our base here in the greater Milwaukee area just because of our connection to property management here. 3 years from now, though, I'd like to be in other markets across the country, some of the larger, higher appreciated markets. That's ultimately the goal, is to expand those other markets. Our philosophy was, let's build here first and build something big here, and then take that rep and go out to other larger markets where we can kind of tote that and help us get into some of these deals. So 3 years from now, I'd say that's the goal.
Gotcha, man. Hey, this has been exciting. Thanks for sharing with us today and just kind of teaching us about your business, how you guys have grown it and what you've done so far. Certainly enlightening. I do appreciate it. Let's jump here into the final few questions. If you could help the listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
One mistake is always put more money in your replacement reserves at closing than you think you need. If you're budgeting and you think, I might need 50K in my account, put 100K. Just be more conservative and account for more stuff going wrong in your pro forma.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great one. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I'd say teaching as many people as I can about how to get into the benefits of real estate, everything it can provide in your life. I've given out a ton of free educational stuff where I get on calls with people and just kind of explain what I've done and giving back that way. I have much larger goals in the future to give back monetary, but no, that's the way what I've done.
Man, that's great. Brock, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Email is just brock@smartassetcapital.com. That's our website, www.smartassetcapital.com. And either way, you can get in touch with me both of those ways.
Awesome. Thank you, Brock. Appreciate your time. Have a great day.
You too, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.